The Adventures of Indiana Jim, number 29, for August 1st, 2009.
And now, coming to you not exactly live from
the cliffs of insanity,
a man who needs no introduction, that international man of geekery, that intrepid arch-geekologist, Indiana Jim.
Don't tell me you've never heard of me.
I'll explain, and I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
You, boy, are arrogant, hot-tempered, and entirely too bold.
I like that. Reminds me of me.
I don't believe I've ever seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
It's a sad fracking day when I'm the guy with the most testosterone in the room.
I have entertained in all the courts of Europe and speak a ready wit in their every tongue.
I told you I was famous.
Indiana Jim, Indiana Jim. London calling. Come in, please.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome back to the Adventures of Indiana Jim. Yeah, I know it's been a while, about a month, so we're kind of on schedule, as it were. The reason for my absence is quite simple. There hasn't really been a whole lot going on, honestly. But I have had an idea, and I will discuss this idea with you in a few short moments. But first, I have something very, very important to discuss with you. I've seen a couple movies recently I'll talk about. I've been watching a TV series on DVD that we'll be talking about, and perhaps a little bit on the whole writing thing. You know, I have this novel that I've been working on, and I'm trying to come up with a way to finish it, you know. lately, things have been bogging down because something else is getting in the way. But we'll talk about all those things as the show progresses. But first, an announcement. The Parsecs.
The final frontier. These are the voyages of
the Adventures of Indiana Jim.
Its continuing mission to explore strange new
thingies.
To seek out new
stuff. Whatchamacallits.
To boldly go where
Scott Sigler, T. Morris, Matt Wallace, Earl Newton, Christiana Ellis, Mer Lafferty, Slice of Sci-Fi
has gone before.
That's right. The moment I have long anticipated has finally arrived. I am a finalist in the 2009 Parsec Awards. Yes, I am nominated for Codename Starkeeper for Best Audio Drama Short Form. I'm very, very excited and very, very grateful, of course, to everyone who helped make Codename Starkeeper possible. Who is my competition? Well, Dave Frizzell of Necropolis Studio Productions, producer of Age of the Zombies, Jeffrey Bridges of Pennant Audio, producer of the Dixie Stenberg and Brassy Battalion Adventure Theater, that's a long name, Mark Kalita, star and Lord High Hooligans of Doctor Who Broken Sea, and Grant Bacciocco of the always amazing The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd. Yeah, that's pretty stiff competition. But I like my chances. You know, everybody knows how great Dr. Floyd is. You know, Dr. Floyd's been around for a while, gonna be around for a while. I don't know if Dr. Floyd won any yet, but really, 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 really hoping for a win there. Unfortunately, I'm not gonna be at Dragon Con. No, I know. It's a sob story, I get it. But it's just, you know, it's the way it goes. I'm not going to be able to be there, so I think my stand-in is going to be Rich Siegfried, I hope, but, you know, we'll see. Anyway, very, very happy about the parsecs, for sure. So let's get down to brass tacks. I recently viewed a, I guess it would be called a geek classic, Fanboys, and saw that on DVD. And then we went out and watched Funny People. Now, the reason I bring these two up together, kind of a juxtaposition. They're both comedies, and they both feature people suffering from diseases. And I don't mean Star Wars fandom, no. I mean cancer in Fanboys. One of the boys has cancer. And in Funny People, Adam Sandler's character, George Simmons, has a rare blood disease. So, it's similar in that regard, and they're both comedies, and they both have Seth Rogen in them. Now, one, Seth Rogen plays a couple cameos. He plays a Trekkie and a really weird Star Wars fan slash pimp. I don't really understand it. The thing with Fanboys, the thing I didn't like about it, I mean, yeah, plenty of language and suggestive humor and yada, yada, yada stuff everybody thinks is funny, and you know, I guess at times some of it was funny, but it really seemed like the story was structured in such a way just to give them an excuse to use geek tropes and randomly inserted Star Wars lines. Just, I don't know why. There didn't really seem to be a purpose to a lot of it. It's sort of, I guess, resembled a National Lampoon's movie, kind of, only not with Holiday Road, which probably would have made the movie 10 times better if they just put Holiday Road in there. But of course, no George Lucas cameo. It did feature the dude from Ain't It Cool News. Forget whatever, you know, everybody knows him. I forget his name. Anyway, that was and he sort of engaged the fanboys in a very lame, easy Star Wars trivia contest. I mean, yeah, let's ask the one dude what Chewie's home planet is. Really? I mean, he's probably played Battlefront once or twice. Probably saw episode. He wouldn't have played Battlefront. Wouldn't have seen episode 3, would he? No, probably not. Yeah, that's fail. But no, seriously. I guess, you know, the questions really didn't seem that hard for the hardcore Star Wars geeks, you know what I mean? Of course, the Kashyyyk question was easy because we live now, but it just, you know, I don't know. It didn't click on all cylinders for me. It was kind of a heartwarming story. I did enjoy some of the stuff. The casino stuff was funny. The one dude having a conversation with the escort girl and learning his true feelings for someone else. And, you know, I was really not really disappointed. I guess it was just kind of eh for me. Once they got to Starkeeper Ranch, it just got slapstick. And, I mean, the nitrous in the van was kind of dumb. And the Star Trek Trekkie Star Wars geek fight was really dumb. It was kind of dumb. I don't think it's that great a movie. Now, I mean, being a Star Wars geek, you know, some of the stuff is funny to me. And I like seeing Ray Park as the security guard in the THX-1138 sort of. But see, that's when it started getting Mel Brooks. You know, it stopped being funny and started being goofy. And I don't know what to say about it. Now, Funny People. Funny People was funnier because most of it seemed like it could really happen. You know, it was actually feasible. It was outrageous, but not to the point where it's just stupid. You know, Skywalker Ranch probably does not have guys dressed in the THX-1138 security drone outfits or whatever those were. Okay, that's not real. That didn't happen. But it was just lame, man. Some of it was lame. And Funny People just was hilarious, man. Just throughout the whole movie, it was funny. The dialogue was brilliant. I mean, they got it right on. Judd Apatow had it going. And it's so thus far my favorite Judd Apatow movie. It's the only one I've watched where I really enjoyed myself. And, you know, the language was a lot bluer in this one, a lot more suggestive than Fanboys. But it worked here, I guess. Some of it, you know, some of it you could just ignore. really. And you could really just ignore it and keep watching the movie, where Fanboys was like, really? You're really putting that out there? You're humping the window of a storefront? Really? In public? No. I'm sorry. anyway, if you haven't seen Fanboys, that's okay, probably. I'd say you're good. You're solid. If you haven't seen Funny People, I would see that. If you don't mind some blue and suggestive humor. And, of course, Fanboys. Maybe you'll like it if you don't mind that, too. But it was just kind of, you know. Even the plot itself was pretty stupid. Now, what I have been watching with the wife is Psych. And Psych Season 1. And I love this show. And actually, I thought I hadn't watched that many. But I remember watching these on DVD. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen this episode. Oh, yeah, I've seen that episode. So, but this was back when we lived with her parents, that we watched it on cable, because we don't have cable, and I really wish I did. So Psych is hilarious. I mean, if you like good comedy, like Monk, it's kind of like Monk, except different. Not really too goofy, but just funny. I don't know how to put it. I really don't know how to put it. So that's it. Writing. Yeah, this really hasn't been going all that well, because, well, the football season is starting up and training camp is going, and I've got the old 49ers fan cast blog and podcast going with things going forward into training camp. And so if you're interested in football at all, especially the San Francisco 49ers, that's the podcast for you. And got the blog posts going, and things got running there. And hopefully, we're trying to get a house. I'm looking for a job. It's sort of, lots of stuff going on. So, and as training camp approaches, just football takes over the mind. It really does. Anyway, I'm going to play a promo, and when we come back, I'll have some feedback.
You know, folks, we here at the Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing Podcast want to salute and thank our wonderful listeners for spreading the word about our show. Our community is growing, and we want to invite you to join us for the ride. We have interviewed some of the best writers of science fiction and fantasy working today, including R.A. Salvatore, Jacqueline Carey, Kim Harrison, Robert J. Sawyer, Brandon Sanderson, and dozens more. We've added some really fun and informative segments, like Ask a Writer with Tobias S. Bakel, who answers your questions about writing, From the Editor's Desk, where major editors of science fiction discuss the business, and Magazine Spotlight, showcasing the very best in short fiction markets. And check out what Tracy Hickman has to say about us.
You are listening to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, the place to learn about publishing in SF.
So come on over to adventuresinscifipublishing.com and share in this insanity, bringing you the business, fun, and intrigue of speculative fiction, one podcast at a time.
All right, that was pretty painless. Yes, the Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing Podcast is back. Let's see, what happened? Sean had to move, and he's working on his real estate license, and now has the time to start putting the podcast back into play. So, had some pretty good interviews to start it off, and J.C. Hutchins is the most recent one. So, get over to adventuresinscifipublishing.com and check it out, please. It's a good podcast. You'll be ashamed of yourself if you don't. Let's just put it that way. So, I promised you some feedback, and this feedback that I have for you comes from a gentleman named Scott. You may not have heard of him, because he's not a famous podcaster, but as soon as I can get these files up, you're going to hear him. Promise, I swear. You can hear the clicky, clickety-click-clack, clickety-clackety-clue. Hello. Anytime. It's Windows Media Player, you know.
Well, hello. Jim, Scott here.
A lot of reverb, Scott.
And a relatively new, really brand new listener to the show.
Appreciate it.
And I wanted to reach out and make a kind of a voice comment here, but
cool.
Not on your telephone line where people sound so tinny and all that.
I'll right, exactly.
Send it to you, and we'll see how this works out. I just wanted to make comment on a few things.
And before you do that, just ixnay on the reverb. I mean, ixnay on the everb, Ray. I mean, it's okay. It's fine. The quality's fine. Just the echo's kind of, it's kind of weird. It's like you're calling from space.
Just let you know.
And then
there's other, you know, people out here that have been podcasting for.
Sounds like you're living in a cave all by yourself, all by your lonesome. Come out of the cave. Or sometimes a ham shack is like that. My dad was a ham. But yeah, anyway, you're going to mention that.
Very long time, in a manner of speaking. Even before there was podcasting, if you really think about what podcasting does, you know, you're recording your thoughts for the day, you're recording maybe some music you're playing to people, politics, and so forth, and you're sending them out where either one or more people can listen to it. Now, isn't that kind of the basic definition of podcasting? The internet
is
the means by which we send it out, and digital recording is the method by which we record it, but did it have to be? I guess to get the name podcasting it did because of the iPod, but the general idea of what we're doing has been going on a long time, and we used to call it Tape Exchange, Tape Pals. And I started doing that back in the late 60s, and we would send tapes to people and do all the same kind of stuff. And if we were sending it to just one person, then that was a one-on-one, like I'm sort of doing with you now, but you're welcome to put this on the show. And if it was in front of a whole group, then we do it in a round-robin setting. The only difference there being that the group was limited. You knew who was going to listen to it. It would be the people who were in that round-robin that you passed. That's a tape that goes around amongst a
right.
group of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you really go way back, don't you? And that's the thing about podcasting is it's completely organic, and people always find a way to circumvent the standard media outlet. You look at the way, I don't know, how far back can I go? I don't want to go past my historical knowledge, but you look at the pamphlets during the colonial era. Wow. The colonial era in colonial America, and things like Thomas Paine's Common Sense and things like this to circumvent the voice of the British and all this. And the tape exchange thing, Tape Pals, of course, you know, obviously slower. You know, you have to mail stuff through the post office. And but yeah, it's you know, it's the way people built community, and podcasting is another way of building community, you know, and the new media is sort of a way of circumventing network television and radio and some of these things. And so yeah, it, definitely interesting, and certainly nothing new, because this kind of thing has been going on for a long time. And by the way, I'm breaking up some of this because it goes kind of long, so I'm trying to hit on the major points.
I did this for a fellow that did an internet radio show, a close friend of mine that used to be a tape pal. He did a show called Friday Night Live. It was ostensibly a satellite television show, but he streamed it on the internet. I captured it, and I put it up as a MP3 archive. So in effect, I was podcasting, and I did that in the late 90s. So I've been doing this for, you know, quite some time. A lot of people, they say, I go back to 2004, you know. Well, in its concept, conceptually, I go back to 1968. In its exact execution, that being an MP3, I go back to probably about 1998. So, or 1995, somewhere in there, 95 to 98. I'd have to go back and look at what the dates are on the tapes that I've still got copies of in MP3, the recordings. So I just wanted to say that. It's been around a long time. It just hasn't been called the same thing. Maybe there wasn't a name for it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny to hear people talk about how they're, you know, old hands at something that's been around for, what, 4 years? I mean, it's, I don't know what to say to that, really.
And I wanted to talk about the politics that you were discussing.
Because, oh dear.
In some ways, you and I may be cut from the same cloth.
Right.
Although you say you're a conservative, I don't know if you're a dyed-in-wool conservative. You consider yourself a far-end conservative or a moderate conservative or what?
I'll tell you what I consider myself. I consider myself a bit of a Reagan conservative, mostly. I honestly think he's the best president we've had, I don't know, since Lincoln? I can say that. I can say that with some confidence. Truman was pretty good. Truman was good. I liked him. But definitely love Reagan. And, you know, I wasn't around enough to have an opinion on all of his particular policies. I am a Christian, though I don't believe in the legislation of our beliefs. For instance, and I've been wanting to say this for a while, but since you brought it up, I'll talk about it. Abortion. I don't agree with it. I don't like it. I believe life begins at conception, and I believe we need to value that. But I believe that the Christian right, as it's most of the time called, has gone about things the wrong way. And I think you look at things like prohibition. You know, we saw what happened there. And I'm not saying I condone abortion. I don't think federal taxpayer dollars should go to fund it. I think the states ought to have the right under the 10th Amendment to take care of that themselves. Gay marriage, I believe the states have the right to regulate that themselves. I think it's definitely a state's rights issue in that sort of respect. I do not believe in federally mandating my beliefs. I don't believe in a constitutional amendment saying marriage is a union between a man and a woman. Gay people getting married does not affect my marriage. It does not affect the way God sees my marriage. It doesn't affect the way I believe in God. You know, these kind of unions are going to happen whether they're legally sanctioned or not. People are going to keep doing what they're doing, and you're not going to stop them. I don't believe the federal government has the right to enforce my beliefs on other people. I believe that the way the Christian right ought to go about things is changing hearts and changing minds, not changing laws, because that's not the way Jesus did things when he was on earth. But that's the kind of conservative I am. I believe in liberty. I believe in the least amount of federal control possible. I do not believe that the Obama administration, in particular, has our liberties at heart or in mind as they go about things. And I do not believe John McCain did, and I don't think George W. Bush did. Very disappointed in a lot of the things that Bush did. And among them, the Department of Homeland Security, excuse me, the stupid security lines at the airport where they have to, I have to take my shoes off and I can't carry hand gel on the plane. I don't remember the hijackers having hand gel. I could be wrong. I mean, they could have been squirting it in people's eyes. But anyway, I'm just kind of sort of define myself. The least amount of government possible. Reagan's slogan, government is not the answer to our problems. Government is the problem, resonates strongly with me.
But I'll tell you right off the bat that, you know, I don't know what I was, if I was conservative at one time and liberal at another, but I consider myself now to be completely moderate. In fact, centrist. People have called me a centrist because I've gotten to the point in life where I think both sides suck. But you really said some truths in reading what you, this, was it Glenn Beck? I listen to some of these talk shows. And some of these guys can drive me nuts because, you know, at the bottom of the stack, they're all about ratings. They'll say anything to get ratings. Sometimes things that aren't even their views, just to be purposely provocative. Rush Limbaugh does it all the time when he says stupid things like, I hope he fails, meaning Obama. But of course, that means that the country will fail too, and who would wish for that? And then he tries to explain later on, no, that's not what I meant. Well, then why didn't you say what you meant, type of thing, you know? When I talk about politics on my show, it's from a what I call a common sense point of view. And you were saying that that's what this book was called. And when you described how the parties have both gotten away from what their roots were, I agree. I believe there was a time when the two parties were much closer together in their political positions. I think you were talking about the idea that the parties, and I've heard other people talk about this too, that the idea of our political system and the parties there would be that these political systems, these parties were supposed to be there to serve the people, not to serve the party. And now they're just to serve the party. And so if one party says black, the other says white, and they just get diametrically opposed in order to always be so different from the other. So the PR, the public image of the parties is so ridiculous, I think they both suck. But that doesn't mean that at one time these parties didn't make sense. And I've heard people from both sides talk about this. You say Glenn Beck just wrote a book, and I bet what he says, and it's very true. Another one I would suggest to you, if you're open-minded about it, is to Garrison Keillor, who wrote a book called Old-Fashioned Democrat, and he talks, or Homemade Democrat, I think it was, and he talks about what the Democrat used to be and what it's turned into. It's pretty much the same philosophy as what you were saying. We're all seeing it. And you know what's funny? Is it's all PR. It's all to get your vote. And then once they get your vote, they move to the center anyway, because reality doesn't exist on the extreme end.
Exactly.
Extreme ends don't make sense. The world is shades of gray.
And sorry to interrupt the file there, but yeah, it really is about getting votes. It's about encouraging the lowest common denominator of your side, whatever that is, convincing the extreme of your side. Although the extreme really are going to vote for that side anyway. And sort of this becomes a triangulation of things. But, you know, when you look at the campaigns of McCain and Obama, Glenn Beck put it this way. You have a choice between poison and poison light. And Barack Obama told everybody what he believed if they read his books, if they listened to the things he said, if they looked at his associations before the campaign began. And I tried to point this out to people, of course, before it began, but people wanted to tell me I was wrong. And so now that Obama's in office, he's doing exactly what he told people he was going to do before the campaign started, before he started campaigning. The things that he believed, the things that were right there and evident, are happening, and they're trying to put into place. And McCain is like socialism light. It's a little bit of government involvement. You know, Bush, take Bush, bailing out the banks. That's a socialist move. That's it's ridiculous. Businesses ought to be allowed to fail. That's the American way. If you can't make your business work, you fail. And you know what? People in Congress ought to be brought up on charges, because with their the way they handled Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, giving people the ability to make these ridiculous loans, and they blame the bankers for it. It's just stupid. You know, I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of all of them, and I think they need to all go away.
If you really look at what these presidents do once they get in there, they usually end up doing things that the far right or far left in their parties don't like.
Right.
And so, like George Bush, when he was supporting, you know, he started doing what Obama is still doing. He started bailing out against the will of the Congress and such, bailing out auto companies and other such things.
Mm-hmm. AIG.
And now Obama wants to do more of it. And, you know, I ask the people who are these right-wing talk show types or extreme white right-wingers, why are you upset? He's doing exactly what Bush did. He's just doing it better and more of it.
I would argue the better part of it, but definitely more of it. And we can see the economy, it's nosediving. It's not getting any better. They're not helping anything. And I hope this is the change that people wanted when they voted for the guy. And the rest of Scott's commentary goes toward Star Trek, which I've got a bunch of feedback on that, which I need to rewatch the movie and then have more feedback from there. But here is Scott with another voice comment about promoting the podcast novel. So we'll see. We'll see what he has to say.
Okay, Jim. You know, there was one other comment that I intended to put in my other voice file comment, which came from your latest show, and that was when you were asking about or questioning how you could better promote a pod book, a podcast audio book that you're going to be putting out. Because you said it's sort of like when you pass it around among the circles of people who are already in podcasting and already listen to podcast audiobook, it's, I guess you could use the term incestuous. I mean, it just, you want to be able to break out of that and let other people out there, certainly on the internet and maybe beyond, know that they could get this book and be downloading it and so forth. You want to get more widespread attention. Well, I do have some ideas on that, and they are things that I've been doing myself. To get outside of just the little audio group of friends you may have, all this cross-linking and cross-love between different podcasts, that's all well and good, but to get beyond that and even further out there, I suggest forums. Getting on forums that might be for, I don't know, writers or science fiction or whatever genre your book is or things like that, participating and then letting people know there what you're up to. Also, you know, there's one avenue of approach that I've been meaning to try here and going to for my own podcast, and that is, you know, there's only so many people out there, but it is increasing slowly, but there's only so many people who are savvy enough to know how to even use an MP3 player,
right,
to play content or even use their computer to go out and get content and play it.
No, that's true. Let me talk about forums real quick, and I know what you're getting to is reaching out to the uninitiated, the neophytes. Oh, well, maybe that's not a good word. But yeah, forums, obviously, that's number one. But, you know, I'm not really involved in a lot of forums, and I don't really have the time to engage conversation in a bunch of other forums, and then, because I would have to do that before I try to promote my book, because, you know, it's, I don't know how to put it, it's not cool in my mind if you're not going to engage in that community to then promote yourself. So I wouldn't do that unless I was really into the forum there. And I have been in writers' forums before, and they typically didn't talk about audiobooks, and this was probably before podcasting really got huge that I did this, but it's sort of like podcasting is still on the fringe, even with the people that use the internet all the time, don't all listen to podcasts either. You know, they read, and, you know, until I got to the point where I was actually publishing something, I don't know. It's something I'll keep in mind, definitely. Because that's just what you need to do. Whatever communities you're involved in, you just talk about it, and that's a good idea.
So many people don't even know it's there, and they certainly don't know how to deal with that. My aim is to teach people about that. And I've got to more or less go after the completely uninitiated. So how about just conventional marketing? Make up a flyer and on it have the web page for your audiobook.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll get back to that in a second. I did want to mention Facebook before I forgot, because there's a lot of people who are kind of internet savvy. That's the word I was looking for. Internet savvy that don't know about podcasts. And Facebook is a real easy way to link people to that to sort of help them discover it. But I've found that linking to stuff like to your blog will only attract people who typically read blogs. There are people who go to Facebook who don't read blogs. Linking to a podcast will attract those who already listen to podcasts, usually. It's very hard to get somebody to convince somebody, even your own family, not that I'm bitter, to check out what you're doing. So there's that.
And at the top of the flyer would be something about what the audiobook is about, the fact that it's free, and a web page to go and download your free copy. If that's, you know, what we're talking about, is a podcast book, right? And post that in places around your area, or for that fact, if you can put it in PDF form, you could request that people you know post it in places around their area. And it would have little tear-off tabs with your web page address on it. It would get put up in public places. Maybe it's grocery stores, libraries,
yeah.
When events are being held, you know, like some of these events like to have around here, like the Lowell Folk Festival, would be a great time for me to put up my little flyers, because lots of people, a lot of traffic there. So I'd bring in like a dozen of these and just kind of put them around town in different places. And get them exposed to people. So that's one thought. Make up a flyer,
mm-hmm.
and get it distributed in your area, certainly, and better yet, if you can get friends to distribute it in their areas all around the world.
Yeah, I've seen people actually do this. Print out a flyer or whatever, you can take it around, and I'm trying to think of who did this. I know Scott Sigler did this when Ancestor was coming out on Amazon, I think. I don't remember. I know I've seen other people do this, and yeah, you print it off and you go take it to where your school or your work or whatever, and I don't know how well that worked, but yeah, that's definitely a way of sort of trying to engage some grassroots momentum there. Certainly, it's untraceable. It's not really trackable unless someone says, hey, I saw your flyer and I tuned in, you know. So yeah, good idea. Other people have done it, and not sure how well it works, but it's certainly a good option.
And another thought, conventional kind of advertising, bumper stickers, T-shirts, that's a pretty expensive one, business cards, and such. They all work. They all draw attention to what you're doing. Even something, you know, like I said, a bumper sticker could be in the back of your car, but maybe even something bigger. If you really want to go nuts, decorate your car, get one of these magnetic, huge magnetic signs. You can take off very quickly,
right?
But you stick it on your car when you're going to be driving in areas where there's a lot of people. Has the name of, you know, of your website. It should be an easy to remember name. Not get one to aim to where you want them to go. And then, you know, when you're driving around, people are going to say, I wonder what that is. And if it's easy to remember, they'll go back home and they'll punch it in and they'll look. And, you know, these are all ideas I've had. I don't know if they've ever crossed your mind, but I'm always thinking about this stuff. And maybe this is what some of the pros out there that talk about this stuff would talk about.
You know, the authors that successfully market their books, I don't think have magnet signs on their cars. I mean, yeah, it's an idea, but I mean, it's kind of, I don't know, strikes me as a little cheeky, I guess. Not a very effective way of marketing yourself. I mean, it's an idea, and I don't know, it's just, that's not something that strikes my interest, but I certainly like your other ideas.
I know, who was a podcast junkie, was talking about C.C. Chapman's Managing the Gray, and he'll talk a lot about this stuff. And I guess there's a bunch of people out there who talk about podcasting and promoting and all that. But I wonder if any of them talk about conventional promoting. You know, call up a radio show with something to say and mention that you've got a podcast, particularly if it's a radio show that has something about to do with what you do. Public broadcasting. You know, newspaper, radio, you know, letting them know that you've got something for free, and this is a public service. Public service ads are free.
Right. T. Morris, who had the podcast Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy, which is kind of on hiatus right now, mentioned that, and I know other people have done this, issuing press releases to papers. And a lot of times newspapers will do, like, local interest stories, and that is a way to do it. My community is a little small. You wouldn't really I probably wouldn't get a lot of interest. But press releases are a good idea. And you can obviously send them to, you know, related publications, or again, for possible local interest stories. I've thought about issuing press releases to towns I used to live in, go to school in, you know, graduate from. So that's an additional avenue there.
Community interest ads are free. Lots of TV, radio stations, and such will.
The other thing I was going to mention is you call into a radio show and start promoting yourself. They tend to hang up on people pretty quickly and say, I've got a podcast and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm, that's great. Click. Plus, podcasting and new media is a threat to radio. So those two don't usually make good bedfellows.
Offer them. If you're not making a buck and such, if you're non-profit, then they're perfectly okay with that. And I don't know what way you're doing this, but you currently may be in that mode. You're just trying to garner attention, and then someday you get a real deal, you know, a real book deal. But
right.
To start off with, I guess a lot of people go out and they get an audience. They build a lot of interest.
Right, exactly. It's exactly what Scott Sigler and J.C. Hutchins and Merle Lafferty especially have done. They've built a fan base that they can then take to a publisher or an agent and say, this is how I've been promoting myself. This is how many downloads or whatever I get. It's how many hits, you know. And it's sort of new enough that it's worked really well for Scott and for JC. Merle Lafferty has yet to be like have a major deal, but she does have a deal for her book Playing for Keeps. I'm talking, you know, big New York publisher types, but she's on her way, certainly. And once you build that following, the publisher knows that they automatically have a market and they automatically have people. And especially when you give them something for free, your audience wants to support you. And people buy books just to support the author just because of the audiobook they've already heard for free. And they also know that these fan bases are very loyal and will then turn around and promote the book to their friends. And it's an instant word-of-mouth generator. And I think that's what they find appealing. It's not a guarantee of success, certainly, because the publisher has to like your book. They have to believe that they can sell your book as well as you sell your book. They have to believe that they can put it on a shelf and people are going to pick it up and buy it. And so you're exactly right. You're right on target there, and people are showing that it works.
Build a lot of excitement. And if you're in that stage, then I would imagine all this would be something that would work and could work. So just a few thoughts. I don't know how many of them would be particular to your situation, but there's certainly things that I've thought of and intend to exploit as time goes along. Take care and bye for now.
Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate you sending in your comments very much. And I appreciate all of you out there for listening. The show went a little long, had a lot of things to get out there, get off my chest or what have you and whatnot and whatchamacallit, which is a good word. So that's it for The Adventures of Indiana Jim, number 29. If you want to get in touch with me, podcast@indianajim.net. Yes, I have fully cleaned out the inbox, and I should probably check it tonight just to be on the safe side, but I remember cleaning it out, and then everything that was in trash was still counting against my quota, so I had to also delete the trash. So podcast@indianajim.net does work. indianajim.podcast@gmail.com. If you're on Gmail, it makes it a little easier. It kind of flows there in your contacts list and works out really nice. What else? podcast.indianajim.net for your comments on the blog post and other episodes, of course. And, of course, the Parsec Finalist Codename Starkeeper audio drama is also on there. If you visit indianajim.net, you will see a new blog post mentioning Codename Starkeeper. And I'm probably going to start adding a few more blog posts as topics come up for me, I hope. But I'll let you know when that happens. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/indianajim. Facebook.com/IndianaJim. Pretty much Google Indiana Jim and you'll find me if you want to stay in touch with me. The voicemail line is 206-666-2826. That's 206-666-2826. Or send an MP3 comment the way Scott did to any one of those email addresses. So thanks again for listening, and I will talk at you later.
You've been listening to The Adventures of Indiana Jim, a production of Visionary Creative Works. Visit podcast.indianajim.net and leave comments on the blog. Send in your emails and audio feedback to podcast@indianajim.net. I'm Dr. John Small. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.